Hey there, welcome to Trans Experience, the podcast where real people from the trans community get together to share their stories, struggles, and victories.
Get ready for some genuine and relatable conversations that dive into the heart of the trans experience and beyond.
We have so much to share, so grab your headphones and let's dive into the awesome and diverse world of becoming and living our own truth.
Hey y'all, welcome to Trans Experience. This is Madison.
And this is LG.
And today, for the very first time in our little podcast history, we have a very special guest, someone that we both met through, or I met through Lambda, Miss Regina. I'm so excited you're here.
Woo! Thanks.
Amen to that. How's life?
Life is good. Life is good, you know? So,
can I share with the listeners how we met?
Sure.
So I'm volunteering for Terrell's, Melrose at Stacy's. And I'm standing there, you know, like doing my thing. Next thing I see is Mary J. Blige coming towards me. And I'm like, whoa, you know, like I see this black queen, you know, like this.
Yes.
And I'm like, wow. So we start talking and I really liked her from the beginning. But then I kind of got like little spooked out because I'm in recovery. And I tell her like, well, I have this much clean and sober. And she's like, I'm in recovery too. And because of the place that I met you at, I was like, bullshit. And then she goes, well, I have 25 years. No, 24. You have 24 then. And I was like, yeah, she's definitely pulling my leg. She's definitely fucking my leg. But then a few weeks later, I went to Lambda, which is a recovery meeting hall for the LGBT community. It's open for everyone, but it's, you know, a safe space for our community as well. And I go and she was speaking. And it was the second time in my life that I had heard a trans woman speaking their truth and mixing it with their recovery. And I was sold. You did became my sponsor a few months later. So my question to you would be, how did you get to the room?
You know, I was sick for a long time. I used for 30 years. But it happened when I was 40 years old. I realized I was in the park. I'd been homeless. I'd been in prison a couple of times. And I was in the park one day and I was looking at the younger girl and working the streets, and they didn't have escort, I mean, internet then.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought to myself, God, I don't have the energy to keep doing this any longer. And so I wanted to find a way out.
Mm-hmm.
What I did, I seen a lot of other people do, because I asked around, and what was pretty common, and I think it still is, they had LARC. They don't have LARC anymore. But LARC was a detox, and you could call them, and they would come get you.
Like community bridges?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
I have experience with community bridges. So yeah. That makes sense. Okay.
And they would come get you. And so I went to the bar because I didn't have a phone. They didn't have cell phones then. And I went to the bar to CC's, and I asked the bartender to call LARC for me. He did, and they wouldn't take. So I don't know. It was sometime later on, I tried it again. This time, they took me.
Was there a reason why they didn't take you the first time?
I don't remember exactly what it was. I'm sure it was because I wasn't half dead and passed out.
Come on.
There's a prerequisite for that shit. Okay.
If we're not throwing your funeral, yeah. We don't want you.
Yeah.
But the second time, they took me. They kept me for a day. And they says, well, we really can't keep you because you're not half dead. You know what I mean? I just needed a detox, but I just needed some detox time.
Yeah.
So they sent me to my very first halfway house. And it was in Mesa somewhere. And it was a co-ed. They had to give me my own room because I was trans. They couldn't put me with the guys and they couldn't put me with the girls. I was there for 3 days. And then from there, they sent me to Maverick House. Maverick House is a wonderful, wonderful program. I think it's one of the best in the city.
Okay.
They're open to trans people as well. I was one of the first that went through. I think I was one of the first trans women to go through a lot of these programs here. I opened the doors for
I put money on today. It. I put money on it.
So I went there and it was co-ed and they gave me my own room. I was there for 3 days. And one day we're going through the lunch line and the guys that were working the cafeteria kept staring at my tits. So I pulled one out and said, is this what you want to see?
That's great.
After lunch, I got called into an office. And when they called me in, it was all the staff there in a circle with a seat right in the middle of the circle.
Mm.
And they set me right in the middle of this, and they started off asking me my name, and what was my, why was I there, and what was my drug of choice. And they all had this weird, stern look on their face. I had never seen, if you know, there's people with time in recovery or people that take this program seriously. Mm-hmm. They have this serious face, this expression on their face
yep.
that's very intimidating. So they says, well, we've been informed that you were exposing your breasts in the cafeteria. I said, who, me? I said, who told you that? And of course, they put me out. They put me out.
No.
And that was my first. And, you know, I realized at that point that my behavior was messed up. The lifestyle I come from, that was very acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to learn a lot. The recovery. So I got into a program called Project Heart. I had a hell of a case manager. I call her my angel. And her name's Jenny Lee. She has 100 years of sobriety. She was a case manager that identified as trans. So how I first met her, I went back to jail again. And when I got out of jail, I did what I usually do.
Mm-hmm.
Stuck my thumb out, mm-hmm. got a ride, turned a trick with the ride, and had the ride drop me off at the first dope house. And, you know, started the whole process all over again. Using is a vicious cycle that it's easy to get involved in it, but it's hell to come out. So the next day, I woke up on a bus bench on 7th Street and Roosevelt.
Oh, I've been on that bus bench a couple nights there.
And it was like high noon in the middle of August. I had a dollar in my bra. That was it. So I decided I would take the dollar and go to St. Vincent de Paul's and get something to eat. And I remember on the bus, this little black boy was with his mother. And he's about maybe 14, 15 years old. And he kept staring at me. And I know I looked a mess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd been out all weekend, you know, tweaking and freaking and doing all kind of. And the mother said, just as loud, don't be looking at that. Don't tell her what that thing been doing all night. Trying to suck with every woman's husband in town.
Sure did.
And I felt so low because I actually had.
She wasn't lying.
She wasn't lying.
She wasn't lying.
And didn't have anything to show for.
The one thing we hate the most in recovery is the truth.
Yeah.
You know? Okay.
So let me ask you this. Why do you think that we wait till we get to that point, especially for trans girls, to recognize that we have a problem?
I don't think it's just trans people. I think it's that any alcoholic or addict. And what it is that we're delusional. You know, the addict, the alcoholic, we're very delusional.
My delusion has delusion.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah. One of the things that addicts and alcoholics do, you know, a normal person would go out and get drunk or get loaded, spend all their money, get beat up, get raped, lose their apartment. And they'll say, oh, damn, I'm never doing that again.
Never again.
Never again. Yep.
And then there's us.
And every time they go to think about it, when they have that, after that first or second
mm-hmm.
drink,
mm-hmm.
they'll remember that pain
mm-hmm.
and say, oh, no, you know, they cut themselves off. Normal people do this.
Yeah.
The alcoholic and addict, we're so delusional. All we don't remember is just the damn party. You know, the rush. You know, that ease and comfort.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. We don't remember the pain.
Mm-hmm.
That's with any alcoholic and addict. What's even harder for the trans person is that we learn to live in a bubble.
Yep.
So we're extra delusional because the world is so cruel, especially when it comes to trans people. And I think a lot of people will always be because we're two-spirited beings. We're a man and a woman. The normal person can't see through our eyes. So they're really ignorant to our feelings, our lifestyle, our culture, or what we experience. So we learn to live in a bubble. It's either fight or flight. But one thing that gets us hooked is that we use the drug or the drink for courage. I remember, you know, I was involved in prostitution. I was not into drugs and alcohol when I first got into it. But once I got into it, I realized that the circle that I had to live around and exist around used a lot of drugs and alcohol.
Yeah.
And what I learned to do is, in order to get the courage to go out there and do what I had to do to survive, I would get loaded. And then after I did what I had to do to survive, I had to get loaded again to forget.
Yep.
And it became a vicious cycle.
And I think that it's not only a vicious cycle, but it's a never-ending cycle. Like you were sharing earlier about how you got into it, though. Like, once you're in it, I know for me, I didn't even know I was in it. I just thought this is how things were, because I was experiencing all these new things.
Absolutely.
So I thought the cycle was just how it was.
Yeah. So do you think that the use during our addiction is connected to the emotions that we're trying not to deal with? When you say we lived in a bubble, so we find refuge in drugs or alcohol?
After the first 10 years of my transition, I made a conscious decision, because I have a bad pick. You know, all the guys that I picked were dogs. You know what I mean? They used me, they lied to me, they manipulated me, they cheated on me. They were the worst. And so I made a conscious decision after 10 years that I wasn't going to get married to any more men. I would marry the drug.
Ooh. Wow.
And I think a lot of us do that.
Yeah.
You know, so whether we're conscious of the decision or not, but this was a conscious decision for me. And when I made that conscious decision, my life didn't seem to get better or worse. You know why? Because I just didn't give a fuck.
I got chills.
There's two words I took out of my vocabulary, is to say, is goddamn and fuck it.
Okay.
You'll very seldom ever hear me use that. And I curse like a sailor, I know. But you'll never hear me use those. And since I took those words out of my vocabulary, I was able to see the sunlight of the spirit. You have to be very careful in what comes out your mouth.
Yeah.
You know, of what you say.
Yeah.
But one of the things that got my attention as you were, you know, telling and sharing your story, is the beginning of it, the struggles that you had being a trans woman. Like you said before, like, we all struggle, whether you're straight, gay, bi, whatever it is that you identify as. The struggle is real when it comes to addiction and alcoholism. But what were the challenges that you faced as a trans woman trying to get into recovery? And what did you do to overcome them?
Jenny Lee, that case manager.
Yeah.
She fought for me tooth and nail. She almost lost her job fighting for me. You know, she would get on that phone and she'd call every place and she'd tell her my story. Yeah. And she fought tooth and nail for me. Each of those places, when I did get into the Maverick House and I did graduate the Maverick House. You know, a lot of times we expect people to do stuff for us that we really don't realize. This is when by me being a hooker, I realized, Miss Regina, your rent's not going to get paid. You laying up here waiting for some man to come pay your rent. You know, you've got to get up and go out there and get it.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to get high today, you got to get up and go out there and get it.
Yeah.
What I had to learn to do was the same energy I put into getting loaded, I had to put that same energy into staying sober. The challenges I met. One of the things when I got sober, I learned respect. I learned about integrity. People gave me respect just because I was sober.
Mm-hmm.
People gave me respect because I was totally honest. So my challenges, the rooms were very closed 26 years ago. The houses were closed.
Yeah.
There was no plastic surgeons in this town. that would work, that would do work on a trans person. There wasn't even hormone doctors in this town. I opened a lot of doors for the trans community, but I had to dress up and show up.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I had to learn to do, once you work on changing you, the whole world changes with you.
Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, for me, it's easy to say that now. You know, 4 years ago when I started this transition, I didn't know there was going to be another side. I just knew I got to a point where something had to give. Either I was going to use until I died, or I was going to do like you said, which was get up and work just as hard at paying my own rent as I was getting loaded. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah.
So what are you really asking me?
What I'm asking you is that, like, how did you overcome that? How did you overcome those challenges?
She fucking did it.
I took suggestions.
Okay.
I did what was suggested. And, you know, I had done the same, made the same mistakes over and over again for 30 years. You know what I mean? When I got into recovery and I made a mistake, that, like, I had 3 relapses in my story. Each one of them taught me something new.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to stand up to people and not feel any kind of guilt or shame. You know what I mean? Because I was working an honest program.
Yeah.
So when I went into the halfway house, and then people snickered and stared at me and made fucking comments out the side of their necks, I'd look at them. And I was in TLC. I paroled out of prison into TLC, which is one of the roughest men's halfway houses here.
I graduated from TLC.
Okay.
As a trans person, though. Yeah, but I did 2 times in a men's house. Terrible.
I was the first one to ever graduate from TLC.
Yeah, that's rough.
And I would look the men, them hardcore convicts, mm-hmm. up in there. I would look them in their face when they start talking about me. I says, look, you a grown-ass man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can't stay sober longer than 24 hours. I'm a sissy and I'm doing this stuff. can't read me.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I was asking you that is because I know that for myself, every single time that I've gone to a halfway house has been a male house. For example, this last time when I went to Lambda and asked for help, that same night, they sent me to this female's house. But the female house, because of me not having bottom surgery, they were like, we can't have you, right? So at that point, I needed to decide if I was going to stand and fight for my transhood or I'm going to humble myself and let go of my addiction. You know what I mean? Because as an addict, I cannot fight both at the same time. I needed to have a clear mind before I could even stand up for who I believe, mm-hmm. to be. You know what I mean? So that was one of the challenges that I had to accept. And I did go to the house. And you're well aware of this because I used to call you, I'm leaving this bitch. I don't like this bitch. like I hate this house. And you will always were able to like bring me back to, and you never forced me into seeing the truth. You always light and shine a light upon the truth for, mm-hmm. me to be able to see it. So one of the challenges that I had to overcome is, where does my transhood begin and where does my addiction start? You get what I'm, mm-hmm. saying? Both of them are part of me, but one is going to kill me sooner or the other. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the challenges that I had to overcome. And I'm grateful that I went to that house.
You know what I had to do in my mindset? I always have believed that I'm a woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in my heart, in my mind, I'm just as much woman as a female. And so what I realized is that without the makeup, without the dress, I'm still a girl.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody can take that away from me.
Mm-hmm.
When I would go into them places, I had to stop. What recovery has taught me is that I can't look at just my character defects and other people's character defects.
Yeah.
I got to look at the cause.
Yeah.
You know, and wherever there's a cause, there's an effect.
Yep. Every time.
So when people would, mm-hmm. come to me, I've learned to use the gifts that I have to enlighten people.
Yeah.
Use the message that God has given me to enlighten people.
Mm-hmm.
And so when people would come to me with their prejudice or being ignorant, or you can see that right away. a trans person, you could see it right away. We know when a person clocks our tea. When a person, you know what I mean? And when a person knows, and we can tell when a person don't know. Mm-hmm. These are just six senses that we pick up on as survival techniques. And when I realize that they're just ignorant, I sit back and I watch and I listen to that person, even when they're not aware that I'm watching or listening. So the next time they approach me, I have armor. I know how to key in, like, because I'll know something about them. What makes them click?
Well, I just want to butt in really quick, because with all of that talk, there is that side that you're creating that armor for yourself. But on the other side, for me, when I met you, it was at Lambda. I was a wallflower. I was on that back wall. I was there only on Sundays at noon. And I was the last one in the room, and I was the first one to leave because I didn't want to talk to anybody. I was so awkward. I was so just out of my element.
Yes.
I grew up in TLC, where you had to fight for a bed, but you also didn't say shit at a meeting because they're going to come for you, you know? And so, I would be at Lambda, and you were one of the two people that used that same technique of you know, getting all of those defects in there and reading that person and feeling that energy. And you're the one or two people that made your way to make sure to say hello to me and hug my neck, even though you had no idea who the fuck I was. You just knew that that's what I needed. That's what I needed to be in that room. And it took a couple of years, but eventually it worked out to the point that I started feeling more comfortable with talking to people and really coming out of my shell, you know? And I know that you and Robin are the two that saw me on that back wall. LG wasn't part of, well, I didn't see LG in the rooms at that point, but I spent 2 years on the back wall. And it was, you know, it was you and Robin that were the ones that just made sure to hug me. You didn't attack me. You didn't say I had to do anything. You just loved me right there as I was. And so, you know, while you're creating the armor, on the flip side of that, you're also allowing people to see that they have a spot too in the world. And that's what you gave me.
And I did to you what was done to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when I come into the room, I remember four people specifically that we took the time. Because, girl, I'd be sweating bullets when I go in there.
Yeah,
I'd be the last one in, the first one out.
Yep.
I didn't want nobody to talk to me.
Yep.
I just wanted to get in there and get out of there.
I wouldn't even get my chips because I was so afraid of beef. Yeah. Yep.
And every time I would come, there was Gail, there was Stevie, and there's a couple of gay boys. I don't want to call their names right now. Mm-hmm. One has passed away, unfortunately. But one, he was an older guy, and I would always feel comfortable sitting next to him because he made me feel comfortable. He didn't offer a whole lot of conversation. You know, he wasn't staring at me or worrying about what people was thinking because he was sitting next to me. As a matter of fact, he was kind of proud to sit next to me. Mm-hmm. So, and then the other one was this gay boy. But there was these four people, and every time I would come there and they'd see me, they would hug me, ask me how was my day. And that was it. And I kept coming back.
That's all it takes.
Yeah.
Yep.
So what does recovery mean to you today? And what does it look like?
Recovery is the third eye. You learn to live a spiritual life and have spiritual experiences on a spiritual level on a daily basis.
Amen to that, sis.
Amen.
So I'm really grateful. When we started this podcast, even before we started recording, I knew that we were going to have guests, and I shared with this with Maddie and with Tay that I wanted Ms. Regina to be the first one to come on board because, like, you've made a difference in my life, sis.
Well, let's be clear. We were excited. It wasn't like she said, we're having Regina on, I'm pulling rank, okay? We were like, yes, we are, okay? The three of us couldn't say it fast enough.
And this is what I want to, like, you and I were both quite well-winded. You know what I mean? Like, we can talk for hours. And you get to hear the level of respect that we have for this lady in our silence. Because both of us are sitting here looking at her like, keep talking, mama. You know what I mean? Unfortunately, we don't have all day to do it. We would love to. But, like I said, You mean so much to me in my life. There's a couple of times that I've shared at Lambda and you're sitting right front and center. And the way that you look at me, like a parent looks at their kid, and you look at me with pride. And every time I'm on that podium and I'm sharing in Europe, I feel like the kid in elementary school. So glad that I have you in my life.
Well, I have a question.
Go ahead.
So I want to know from you, Miss Regina, what's the best advice you've ever been given?
Honesty is the best policy, and acceptance is the key.
Amen. At her going old school. So I had a question kind of like that, and I was going to ask it like for all three of us to answer it.
Okay.
But this one is, what advice would you give your old self, the one that had 24 hours in recovery? What would you tell yourself in early recovery, those first few days?
Oh, you want to go first?
Yeah.
Okay. The advice that I would give myself at 24 hours going into hour 25 is that it doesn't just get better, it feels better.
And you look better too, babe.
Thanks. But no, it does. Your soul, your heart, your energy, everything on the inside starts feeling better. And I didn't think that was possible. I had to be drunk or high or with a dude to feel better. And I found out on hour 25 that, you know what, actually, this does feel better.
What I've learned to do is, what I had to do was play the tape. You know, I always say,
oh, yeah,
I play the tape. But I always focus on yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And I look at my situation where I was yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And then I look at my situation where I am today. And then I'll look at my situation where I'll probably be tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm sober today, I know it's better than yesterday.
Amen.
And if I don't get stay sober today, I don't know what the hell it's going to be like tomorrow.
Yep.
So I just stay.
There you go.
For myself, it would be, it's not going to be your way, but it's going to be way much better.
Yeah.
And don't give up.
Yeah.
We're blessed to have you. I'm blessed to have you in my life. I'm blessed to have Matt in my life too. Shout out to Tay. She'll be coming back next week on the next podcast. Other than that, any last words? I'm not going to kill them.
I sincerely appreciate you taking the time to come and join us for our little podcast, our little microphones.
I want to just throw this out real quick.
Go ahead, love.
You know, I've been trying to talk these two into starting up a trans support group. And so I have found a venue.
Okay.
And so.
Oh, this is interesting.
Yeah, I'm going to get this lady to talk to the pastor of the church.
Nice. So.
Have you guys ever heard Voluntold, who your sponsor?
Yes.
At its finest.
You need it.
At its finest.
And also, I'm starting an all-trans pageant.
Oh, that's right.
Uh-huh. Miss Trans Legends pageant.
That's right.
So give us the info on that.
Well, Trans Legends pageant is girls that have originally, when it's the pageant for girls of 40 and over.
Okay.
But I've decided, since I've bought into the pageant and it's the LLC is under my name, mm-hmm. I'm the controller and owner of the pageant, I'm going to make a few changes. So I want to bring in girls that have transitioned for at least 10 or 20 years that have made a spot in the LGBT community, that's done some work.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
True legend.
Yeah, a true legend.
Nice.
And so the pageant will be...
May 12th?
Yeah. Whoever's crowned will receive $3,000. And it's May 12th, Mother's Day. Mm-hmm. And it will be held at Cobalt.
So you're like my mama. Mm-hmm. You're like my mama. So if I sign up, like, can we fix it? Can we get the $3,000?
No, there will be six judges.
Oh.
Six
have
judges.
Have you already chose your judges? Okay.
Nice. Well, thank you for that info. We'll definitely be looking out for that. Other than that, thank you to everyone that's tuning in and that supports our podcast. We really greatly appreciate it. We're blessed to have you. Thank you, Ms. Regina. We love you.
And yay! What a great day!
And with that, this is LG.
This is Madison.
And this has been Trans Experience.
Thank you for listening to another episode. We hope you enjoyed it and will find the time to leave a comment with your feedback.
You can like us and follow us on facebook.com/transexperience3.
Also, feel free to email us at transexperience3@gmail.com.
Thank you.